Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, August 13th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the easy way to sell or recycle the used gadgets lying around your home or office. For a 5% bonus payment for your used gadgets, go to gazelle.com, bonus code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Sarah Lane.
Behind the board is our excellent producer, Eric Lanigan.
Hey, guys. How are you?
And also joining us by Skype today is Mr. Robert Herron.
Hey, thank you for having me, guys.
Hey.
Co-host of HD Nation on Revision 3, as well as a purveyor of HD information on his own blog. What's the name of your blog again?
Herron Fidelity.
HerronFidelity.com.
It's a gosh darn reunion.
The great Roger Chang helped me come up with that domain name. So
it is a little screensavers reunion. I have my screensaver shirt on today.
See?
Awesome.
It's like you knew somehow.
It's like I knew that I would be co-hosting the show with Robert and Sarah today.
Nobody could see it.
All right.
There it is.
You weren't lying.
The old school logo.
It's really there.
It's the ZDTV one.
Ooh, yeah, that is
the tech TV
that's
one.
A relic.
It's about to
I have one of those in a closet somewhere.
Anyway, yeah, so Robert, Sarah, and I know each other from way back. You don't care about that. What you care about is Oracle suing Google over the use of Java in Android. Here's what's going on. Oracle has said they're going to file a lawsuit. I don't know if they actually have yet or not, against Google. They haven't contacted Google about it. Google's like, well, we didn't hear anything about this, over patent violations on the use of Java. Rather than license the sophisticated version of Java from Sun, Google created a workaround using the free open source Java version and then developed its own Java virtual machine that runs the Java-based applications that was used in the Android operating system, which is also open source. Now, Oracle, which owns Sun, which made Java, has come out and said, yeah, the way you did that violates our patents, and we're going to sue you.
But it's open source.
It's not.
So how open source is the open source?
So the Java's open source, but the Java virtual machine that Google developed, they say violates the patents.
Even though they're both open source.
Well, yes, exactly. Exactly. They say.
I mean, is this because it's Google or because they're really going to be upset with anybody who is doing something like this?
It's because it's Google. Yeah. It's a little game theory, don't you think, Robert?
To me, it seems that if Oracle's going to go after Google on this one, then they really have to be careful about the developer community out there as a whole. Going, you know what? If we're getting pounded, or if a big company is being targeted for use of supposedly open source software. What are private developers who are using that, you know, to either reduce costs or provide low-cost services? Maybe it's time to start thinking about another platform to be developing on.
And Oracle can come back and say, no, it's not using the open-source Java part. As long as you're compiling it and running it on a legitimate Java virtual machine, we're fine with it. The problem is that they created their own virtual machine. It's only the virtual machine that's the problem. And this is reminiscent of the problems that Sun and Microsoft had over Java virtual machine, which actually led to Microsoft creating their own version of Java back in the day. So that they could just get away from all the patents. So, yeah, this is the same mess all over again.
Well, so what's Google's next move? If they can't get around this, I mean, do they go the way of Microsoft and go, all right, well, we'll just build something else?
Yeah, they
kind of already did, but it's still...
They called the attack baseless, and they say they're going to fight it. So their next move looks like they're going to try to call Oracle's bluff. Mm-hmm. If this goes to court, though, we're talking years. I mean, you look back at the lawsuit that SCO carried out against Linux.
Yeah, that got wrapped up recently, and we all forgot about it.
Yeah, I mean,
that
started when we all were still working at the screensavers in early 2000, just got wrapped up a month ago. So this is a similar kind of case. It could take forever. In which case, what does Oracle get out of this?
I think a lot of bad publicity, personally. And it's not the same scenario, but if you think of the difference, say, between Apple's take on Flash versus HTML5, and why Apple would be more inclined to go with an open standard versus something that's more proprietary. And if the courts decide that, yeah, the virtual machine code in Java is proprietary and you can't even create your own version of it based on open standards, then you know what? Developers are going to flee from that, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think, actually, who in the chat room said this? Fetty Wings, I think, has it right. Oracle's hoping for a quick cash settlement that would allow them to have some control over the Android operating system and get a cut of that, because otherwise they're getting left behind in this situation. So it's sort of it's a bit of a can't lose deal, because if they don't do anything, if they let Android continue, they stand to lose, and if they sue and they lose, they stand to lose. But you're gonna lose either way. Why not sue on the chance that maybe you win, maybe you get a quick settlement out of Google?
I don't know. Google doesn't sound like that they're
not the settling
going down
kind.
That route. If they say this is a baseless suit, it doesn't sound like they're willing to dole out a bunch of money.
Certainly, they're not going to roll over easily.
Right.
That is true. RIM has assured India that they will have access to the services they need. Indian authorities met with RIM officials on Friday and also pledged not to go after other companies, including Google and Skype, to protect the country from cyber spying and attacks planned over the internet. As we mentioned earlier this week, RIM faces an August 31st deadline to give authorities the means to read email and instant messages sent over their BlackBerry devices, else they will cut them off. They will block those services in India.
Doesn't it seem like BlackBerry is doing just what they say they don't want to do, which is have all these special agreements with individual countries that have their own rules, but they are bowing down to all the big countries that have all the BlackBerry users?
Yeah, they had a big announcement today. They put out a statement, said that no government can get greater access to BlackBerry consumer services than the carriers and regulators already impose on RIM's competitors and other similar communication technologies companies. RIM also said that it won't be making any changes to the security architecture. Quote, contrary to any rumors, the security architecture is the same around the world, and RIM truly has no ability to provide its customers encryption keys. So on the one hand, they're saying, don't worry, if you use a BlackBerry, your encryption is safe. It is not going to be spied upon. On the other hand, they seem to have convinced Saudi Arabia that they would get what they wanted as far as some kind of spying. They're meeting with India in a way that's supposed to, you know, settle this down. But we don't know what these agreements consist of, at least not yet.
The Ars Technica article too about this was talking about how I'll quote it real quick. It was just saying RIM's principles boil down to allowing access only within the confines of local law and national security requirements. So if local law suddenly says, you know what, if we go to say a company that's using BlackBerry devices and we go, you know what, we want your logs for this, and by law you have to provide them, then, you know, that's out of RIM's control. So, and I imagine the encryption techniques used are just for point to point. Once it's in the device, or once it goes through, say, a corporate server system, it's being decrypted at some point. So,
well, yeah, that was one of the questions here, was the idea of, well, what are you really getting if somehow you were able to decrypt the BlackBerry communications? Then the people who don't want you to spy, whether they're up to ill or not, are going to use other means of communication that involve VPN, where they're decrypted on a corporate server, and you never see that message at all. So aren't you just flushing people off of BlackBerries onto other devices rather than actually solving your problem?
I would think that any carrier that is in the same country that has to deal with the same local... It sounds like this is the laws being applied would apply to any carrier within that country. So RIM's just not getting any special treatment. At least that's my take on what I'm reading so far.
And then this idea that India would go after Skype and Google is even more laughable. They're basically saying anyone with encryption... we're going to go after so that we can tap it. I mean, and Skype has dealt with this a couple times before, where they're like, you know, we'll give you a backdoor, which is different than what RIM is doing, but they don't want to do that any more than they have to.
With enough money, I think you can crack, or probably not even money is an issue, but after attending enough Black Hat and DEF CON conferences, I think there's probably a way through just about every scheme out there currently, provided you can put yourself in the right place at the right time with the right technology.
All right, we got the July video game sale numbers in for the United States. Xbox 360 is back in the lead. 443,500 units over the Nintendo DS at number two. The Nintendo Wii is now number three. And the PS3 is no longer at the top of the pack. They had a brief run at it earlier in the summer, but they are now back behind the 360 and the Wii at 214,500. It was also a down month for video game sales overall to consoles, although a lot of people are thinking that that might be attributed to the success of StarCraft. StarCraft II has sold 721,000 units. That's more than NCAA Football 11 sold on both the Xbox 360 and the PS3.
Woohoo!
Video game sales dropped 8% from July of last year.
Yeah, so does that include
okay, which was console sales, because I'd be curious to see the numbers for downloaded software on the PC side of things as well. Except for StarCraft 2, I can't tell you the last, say, probably 10 games I purchased have all been digitally through various online retailers.
Like a Steam situation? Or
exactly.
Yeah.
Steam or Direct to Drive or one of the various. And Impulse.
Did you not buy Red Dead Redemption?
No, I didn't, actually. I will say, though, for the Xbox, the big thing really is just that redesign of the console. That's what spurred these sales. Finally, they've got a reduced size of the unit. Hopefully, the new spin on the chips and everything have produced better cooling results, better reliability. But I've been kind of waiting on this revamp of the hardware itself, and that it almost has me running out to buy one.
Yeah, my old Xbox 360, knock on wood, is still working, and I don't want to give it up until the red rings of death finally show up.
But this is wood.
But that new one,
you might have just.
I think it's some sort of pressed wood.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Just want to make sure you're not jinxing yourself.
There's wood underneath there.
Okay.
Underneath the,
all right.
The Mylar.
I'm concerned.
No, I appreciate your concern for that, because I'm going to go home and my Xbox 360 is going to die on me now.
It's going to red ring.
But
I'd be curious to know, though, if they would report. Do you think Microsoft's actually made a profit yet with Xbox Live and the console sales yet? Do you think they've even broken even? I mean, I know Sony hasn't, and nor will they probably ever on that console, but...
Well, Xbox has got a year advance on Sony, so you got to figure there's an extra year in there. The Xbox 360s that they're selling now, they make money on. Where they didn't before, but they don't make a lot of money, but they're at least close to break even. That's one of the brilliances of keeping the same essential hardware around for 5 years, is that those pieces get cheaper and cheaper as time goes on. And
totally.
They've sold a lot of games, so yeah, I think they probably have made a little money. The last earnings statement from Microsoft showed that division making money. Again, not a ton. They weren't leading the way at Microsoft, but they were in the black. So I think, yeah, ultimately the answer is probably yes.
I always go back to thinking how Nintendo does their console gaming business. And from launch day of every product since for the last couple now, the DS, the Wii, and I'm trying to think of the previous console they had out. But their costs, they've always analyzed the cost of the consoles and said, you know what, we are breaking even from day one, or actually being profitable from day one. So it's never been like the scenario of putting out a very expensive piece of hardware and then hopefully making money on the back end.
Yeah,
they'd rather put out the a more affordable piece of a more, not simplistic per se, but just a little less crazy in terms of the hardware specs, get it out there, make it easy to develop on, and just cash in from day one. And you just look at the sales numbers for something like the DS or the Wii, and it's staggering how many of those have moved.
And when you look at the down number for video game sales over last summer, somebody in the chat room was asking, is that seasonal? Well, it's not, because you're comparing it to the previous summer. So it's season to season. But I think the reason they're down over last summer is everyone knew StarCraft II was coming out in July. And so everybody cleared their schedule. It's like when the Hollywood blockbuster comes out, when the next Harry Potter comes out, you're not going to put your best title out. You're not going to put any good movie out up against Harry Potter, because you know everybody's going to rush to see that. And so with StarCraft II coming out, I have a feeling everybody's sort of cleared their schedule of releases around it, and we'll start to see it picking back up in August.
I think there was a month-long holiday in Korea just for StarCraft.
It's still going on.
It's unbelievable.
All right, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsor, Gazelle. I used them this very morning. What Gazelle does is allow you to sell your old smartphones, your MP3 players, your laptops, your gaming consoles, all those old gadgets when you want to replace them, and you know, and it's time to get rid of them. Maybe I should get rid of my Xbox 360 before it read Rings of Death.
Yeah, stay proactive.
You can get a little cash for them from Gazelle. What I did this morning is I took my old iPhone 3GS. I went on to Gazelle. I did a search. iPhone 3GS came up with the two models, 16 and 32. I picked mine, answered just a couple of questions on the condition. And then they said, great, would you like to print out a mailing label right now? Or would you like us to send you a box with the mailing label on it? I'm lazy, so I said, yeah, just send me the box. They'll send me that. I will pack it up, drop it off at the post office, send it back to them, and they will send me money whatever way I want, by PayPal, by Amazon gift card, by check. So you might want to consider this as a way to get rid of products. They take products in 20 product categories, over 200,000 unique items. And they'll take almost anything because they'll recycle it for you even if they can't sell it. So even if they come back and say, hey, you know what? We can't give you a whole lot of money. We can't give you any money for that. Well, they'll take it off your hands and they will recycle it responsibly. So check them out, gazelle.com. And in fact, I did this morning too. If you use the code TNT, you get a bonus, 5% bonus on the price that they quote you. So use that code, gazelle.com. TNT is the code to use. Back to the news, and we got a story about jailbreaking still working on your iPhone 3G, even with the new iOS.
Though. Well, it's because you can't update those old guys, right?
Well, no, you can put iOS 4.0.2 on an iPhone 3G. A lot of people say it's very painful.
Got it.
You can do it.
Were the performance issues, though, related to trying to use the new OS on the older hardware?
A lot of the features don't work. A lot of people report performance issues, but you can jailbreak it. And so if you have an iPhone 3G that was jailbroken and you upgrade to iOS 4.0.2, the Red Snow jailbreak still works.
Uh-huh. So you're like better off.
Yeah,
than
exactly.
Than just having the updated software that doesn't work that well.
In fact, you're better off in a couple of ways because the only way to get the patch that fixes the PDF problem is to jailbreak the older phones. Engadget reporting this, that if you own the original iPhone or iPod Touch, you're still at risk since Apple's update isn't compatible with those devices.
Yeah.
You can't put iOS 4.02 on the original
right.
iPhone.
Yes.
Not the iPhone 3G, but the original iPhone.
Well, that's funny.
So
that's irony.
If you're rocking an original iPhone and you're proud of it, you're all retro, jailbreak that baby.
And then you're really going to have some fun.
Because honestly, that's the only way to patch this this PDF problem because they're not issuing a patch for the older iOS.
Do most of the jailbreaking tools allow you to select which OS you want to use? I mean, or do you usually always have to go with the latest and greatest?
Well, you usually find I can't remember what the file is called, but the firmware file is rolled in and you select it. But they're built to work with various, with particular firmwares. So yeah, you don't have a whole lot of flexibility there. But, you know, there you go. So if you're on iPhone, original iPhone, definitely jailbreak. If you're on iPhone 3G, you can either be iOS 4.0.2 up to date or not. You could still jailbreak. If you're on an iPhone 3GS, you got to stay on 4.0.1 if you want to stay jailbroken, but then you have to deal with that PDF vulnerability. And if you're on iPhone 4, same thing. So those are your jailbreaking options. Go and do what you think is best. Australia is getting a national broadband network. We've talked about this before. It's going to be 100 megabits per second for every citizen in Australia. But according to a Slashdot posting, NBN Co., the Australian government company established to build the network, now says they're going to provide 1 gigabit per second service without increasing the budget. You believe that?
They're throwing some money at Cisco.
It doesn't add up. How? I guess I believe it, but how does that work?
It works with election accounting. That's my guess. There's an election coming up 21st August in Australia. The opposition, I believe, are the...
What's it going to take for you the
Liberal
to
Democrats.
Elect this man?
The opposition are saying, this is a waste of money, this broadband network, and we're going to scuttle it if we get into power. We're going to partner with the private sector to improve existing copper networks and install more wireless broadband, and we can promise you 12 megabits per second. So if you're voting strictly on the broadband initiative, it's like, well, I go with the opposition, put them in power, I get 12 megabits per second. I go with the current people, I get 100 megabits per second, but they spend all $43 billion putting it into place. So they just sweetened the pot, said, for $43 billion, we'll give you a gigabit per second.
You know who doesn't care about this?
Who?
Tasmanian people.
That's right. We had the story about that. Because the Tasmanians are, they're getting the first rollout of the fiber that would be behind this network, and they can only get like 50% of them to agree to allow the fiber to be rolled into their house.
Right.
Get off my lawn.
Get out of here. We don't.
So they're coming back. How about a gigabit per second? I don't care.
Are you knocking on wood? You're knocking on the Tasmanian door?
On the Tasmanian door.
Okay.
Sir?
I think all of this just shows how bad our own broadband service is here in the United States. So
it is sort of depressing, isn't it?
If they could pull off a nationwide 12 megabit system.
I know.
Is that going to be like a utility where everyone has access to it for free? Or is this just saying our national backbone is now...
No, it's they're running it into people's houses for free. Now, you have to pay for the service eventually, but they'll run the fiber into your home for free. And the 50% of the Tasmanians were like, nope, get off my lawn, government man.
You figure most of the backbone...
Stop digging around here. Most
of the backbone technologies, I would assume, if they can do 100 megabit, probably wouldn't... I mean, you'd have to change out some of the hardware on the back end, but moving from 100 megabit to 1 gigabit, it doesn't sound like a huge stretch to me. I mean... You could probably use most of the infrastructure that's in place.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It wouldn't change the cost of the infrastructure necessarily, as long as you can figure out how to manage the network to deliver that. Maybe that's because they know 50% of the Tasmanians aren't going to be using it. They're like, we got a bunch of extra broadband.
I also wonder, too, if this was a case where they had this plan in place for maybe 10 or 100 megabit for a while now, and maybe it's been 5 or 10 years since this plan was first announced, and they said, you know what, we were thinking of maybe 10 or 100 megabit back in the day, but... With the same money today, we should be looking at gigabit instead.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought as well. On to British network ITV. Does that stand for independent television? I think it used to. I'm not sure if it still does, or I'm not even 100% sure that it ever did. But the ITV is your alternative to the BBC, right? Yes,
which is the British Broadcasting Corporation.
Yeah, which is run by the government.
Yeah.
ITV has responded to a rumor that Apple would be coming out with a new Apple TV that would be named the ITV. By saying it has vigorously defended its intellectual property before and it will again. It's just a rumor, ITV. But right.
They're saying, aw, hell no.
Apparently they're furious.
Don't even think about it. ITV, a network that's been called ITV for a long time, that's a separate issue. But even if there wasn't a problem with two of the same brand name, ITV, I just think that doesn't even sound... Like Apple.
Well, you got iPad, iPhone, ITV.
It makes sense. Starting to... I don't know. I feel like I'm getting real sick of that I stuff. I think that they could come up with something better than
ear
ITV.
Ear
TV?
There you go, yeah.
We're in a new decade. E was for the 90s. I was for the first decade of the 2000s.
Yeah.
We need a new letter. How about X?
Do you think this might be just a preemptive strike by ITV just to say, hey, look, we don't want to get into a legal... shenanigans about trying to see who has, if you can use this or not, but perhaps if you paid us substantial amounts of money to use our trademark, company name, go
right.
for it.
It's almost like, what does it hurt them to just speak up now? And so down the road, if they actually have to get into a kerfuffle of sorts, they can say, you know what, in August, we already said that this was going to be an issue.
Yeah, according to The Mirror in the UK, unnamed sources described executives as furious. And then a blog called Pocket Lint contacted an ITV spokesperson for a more official take. And that's when they gave the more like, we have highly valued intellectual property. We've defended it in the past. Assuming Apple does go ahead with the ITV name, it could always choose to call it something else in the UK. So a little more measured in the official response. But this is all in regards to a rumor. We have no idea whether Apple is actually coming out with a product, and much less whether they're going to change the name of it.
If they didn't use I mean, you mentioned X. It's like, it sounds like Xbox or X is sort of a weird letter anyway.
I've been over here trying to think of what letters haven't been
Me
used.
Too.
There's nothing. I thought, maybe H, but you got H264.
It's like
every
all the
letter is taken.
How about really stupid names and double letters because
well, they're Apple.
We're all
why
out
don't they
of
use
ideas.
A?
Ooh.
The ATV. Oh, wait a minute.
It's with a free TV. Copy of the A-Team.
And the A-Phone.
Every new subscriber.
The A-Pod.
How about the A-Plus TV? Doesn't get any better.
Yeah, right.
Perfect score.
Exactly, 100%.
Valedictorian right here.
A couple corrections in the chat room. Well, one, not a correction. One saying, yes, ITV does stand for independent television. Another person quickly said, BBC is not run by the government. They're correct. BBC is funded by your, I believe, your licensing fees. But it has a connection to the government. So cool down, LiteralNet.
I love the BBC.
I do too.
I'm a BBC fan.
BBC Radio.
I would pay, if I could get all of the BBC television, I would pay the license fee. I would pay the television license fee that you have to pay in the UK. I'd pay the taxes. Just let me get everything that you get at exactly the same time that you get it in UK without advertisements.
You don't like that BBC America package stuff?
No, because first of all, they put advertisements for like, you know, Swiffers and stuff. Like, it's really horrible advertisements in between. And then on top of that, they delay everything. It's like, oh yeah, you'll get Doctor Who 3 weeks after the UK gets it. You'll get the It Crowd never. Well, it's not a BBC, so that one's not fair. But Being Human, yeah, you'll get that. Few months later, Sherlock. We're not even going to run that.
You want the same thing.
I want to see the exact same thing, and I will pay for it. Come on,
dude. If I could get Top Gear in HD from the BBC, then I would pay for that. Although
you can get it on BBC America, but you can't get it on HD everywhere. Even though it is available in HD in America, but not everybody carries it that way.
Not yet for me, anyway. So.
And it's delayed.
I wait. Frustrating.
UK proxy. That's all. That's the only way around it. All right. Shareholders are suing Hewlett-Packard, HP, over the departure of their CEO, Mark Hurd. It's not about the sexual harassment. It's not even about the expense reports. They say that they shouldn't have given him the $12.2 million cash payoff and the improved stock options they gave him.
They shouldn't have given him that. Something that was clearly part of his contract before any of this went down. Because of the circumstances under which he was let go
steps
down.
Quote, as a result of Hurd's, Les Jack's, and the HP board's shortcomings, HP lost significant credibility and the market punished HP upon the August 6th, 10th revelation of Hurd's termination, slashing its stock rating and erasing over $9 billion in market capitalization when the company's stock resumed trading on August 9th. So the board is accused of gross mismanagement, waste of corporate assets, violating the California Corporation Code, misappropriating information, and unjust enrichment.
I love that. I've never even heard that before. What does that mean?
It means that you
it's an embarrassment of riches.
You enrich someone. You're an embarrassment of riches. It means that you you gave somebody money and
this ever successfully? Have shareholders ever successfully sued a board of this size and won? Because this, to me, it's like, hey, this is a contract
probably.
That I don't know. I mean, it's unfortunate, obviously, but I just don't really see where the case is.
The plaintiff, the Brockton Contributory Retirement System, which is an investor, also aims to reclaim Hurd's severance package and to enforce governance changes on the board. They're mad about everything.
Well, I don't really blame them, but
how about tying the performance of the CEO in terms of the corporation's performance as well as the severance package for if that person's going to be let go? Just put that in the contract saying, hey, look, if our stock's going to take a dump when you leave.
Yeah, it's like a sales incentive.
How about tie that payout, that final payout to that level of performance for either the company or it'd be the company. That's all the shareholders are interested in, so.
I wonder if that's an effect with any. I would have to assume it would be with certain.
I bet you when that CEO negotiated his contract, it was probably pretty ironclad. It's like, look, I come in, I do my thing, I leave, you pay me. Right. If you want to try to break that, you know, let's go to court.
Wall Street Journal says that, among other things, the 45-page suit alleges they violated the corporate governance guidelines by failing to inform shareholders of the investigation. That could be the crux of all of this, is that it caught people unaware. Mm-hmm. They didn't know it was coming. And it details the exit package. According to Wall Street Journal, shareholder derivative suits have become common in recent years. They're typically suits brought by shareholders on behalf of a company against a third party. In this case, the complaint was filed against the defendants on behalf of HP. So it's sort of your snake eating its own tail here. You know what that leads to? I was hoping you'd know what that leads to. It leads to the next story, which has nothing to do with either a snake or HP, but Rupert Murdoch acting smart, in my opinion. Turns out News Corp is such a big fan of their iPad apps they are going to base a new national U.S. news title entirely via mobile apps,
so
including
when you say,
iPad and other mobile phones.
So news title like Fox News, for example.
Or the New York Times or USA Today. I mean, it's gonna be built from the ground up specifically for mobile app stores.
And I wonder how different it'll be from anything that News Corp does now.
Well, that's what's great about this is that they're talking about short, snappy content, as well as lengthy journalistic articles, but they are building it specifically for this mode, for this medium, because that is the problem that a lot of companies have found up to now is, wow, we're having a really hard time taking the New York Times and adapting it. Actually, the New York Times is a bad example because they've done one of the better jobs, but a lot of newspapers have a hard time figuring out how do we adapt our content to this new this new medium. A lot of television stations the same way, and then television stations, they prioritize video, but now they have to do text. Newspapers, they prioritize text, but now they have to do video. Everybody has to be good at everything. I think this is brilliant. I think Murdoch is, this is the kind of thing that I'm always railing against Murdoch for. When he's talking about erecting paywalls and all this stuff, I'm like, find a new business model. This is a new business model, and it's smart because there's not a national paper in the United States other than the USA Today. We don't really have that sort of situation that you have in a lot of other countries. This is a way to do it, to say, hey, you know what? We're gonna create something for this new medium, and we know how to make money off this medium.
I wonder how much it is about Rupert Murdoch having a vision of the future, or realizing that none of his ideas are working.
You know, I think it's a little of both. I think Murdoch's a smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think
smart person.
I mean, obviously, he could not be as successful in business as he is without being smart. I think he was gambling with his recent ramblings about paywalls because I think he wanted to shake up the tree. And I think he thought maybe he could change social behavior a little bit by, you know, putting out some information that changed the way people think. Oh, you can't get a free lunch anymore and all this sort of crap.
And that's all been pretty rocky.
Yeah. And I have no problem with new and innovative ideas as long as you're not trying to just deal me a bunch of crap that is not true, which is what he was doing before. This I like.
This sounds like, too, you could manage the entire operation with a relatively small group. And if you do it right, it really depends on what kind of turnover, what kind of subscription service you're going to get for it, and how much money absolutely you will be making on a monthly basis. But you think that with a relatively small crew, and if you could tie them to some kind of an incentive to keep the content going and the performance of the app itself enticing for new users, tie it to absolute performance in terms of what the group's paid. And I bet you it would turn out to be a pretty good experiment in seeing what can be made with an application like this with the new sources that are already present within his organization. It's like, man, really, just cull the best of your content and get it onto that application and literally churn an instant profit with probably very little overhead.
Your biggest hump, I think, is getting people aware that it's there, getting people to know why they want it. So you're going to have to make a splash when you unveil it. But, you know, USA Today didn't always exist, and they had to convince people that you wanted to buy a national newspaper with bright, colorful Fisher-Price logos.
They just put it outside my hotel room.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Maybe they can just deliver it to your iPad automatically without you wanting to download it.
And then all of a sudden I'm reading it every day.
iPad Today. Oh, wait.
Exactly.
Yes, they should give a free version to iPad Today if you really want to launch
Rupert,
it.
Rupert, give us a call. We can give you some pretty decent exposure.
All right. It is time for us to move on to the news fuse.
Woohoo!
Kaboom.
Facebook unveiled its official live video streaming channel today, Facebook Live. To kick off the launch, actress America Ferrera will stop by Facebook's headquarters in Palo Alto. The channel will be used to broadcast celebrity visits, Facebook events, and official Facebook announcements.
So it's actually live now.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Check it out.
Hey, cool. Zynga hired former Facebook chief revenue officer and former MySpace CEO Owen Van Natta today. He will become EVP of business for the makers of Farmville and other online games. A rumor spread that Van Natta had left Facebook because he knew he would never succeed Mark Zuckerberg. Who is Mark Zuckerberg?
Never heard of him. I'm going to sue him in federal court.
You know, I'm going to Zynga. Farmville for life.
eBay is in talks with Google over making PayPal an option for buying apps on the Android platform. Customers currently pay via PayPal and Google Checkout Service. Google might attract more paying customers this way by making it easy to purchase apps without having to set up a Google Checkout account. PayPal has 87 million active accounts. And that's it for the news fuse.
That was fun.
One last story, though, before we move on into the calendar. Drunk driver mugshots to be featured on Facebook if you get caught drunk driving in New Jersey by Evesham Township's police.
Here's the problem I have with this story, and it's a pretty big one. Sometimes when you are arrested for drunk driving, depending on how they have decided you should be taken downtown, so to speak, you can be booked and given and your mugshot get taken and fight them later on and be proven innocent. So if my mugshot goes up on Facebook and I have not been convicted of a crime, that is super unfair.
It would have to be convicted, I would imagine.
No, they're putting up mugshots of anybody who's getting them.
Yeah, convicted or not.
Yes, that is the loop. I've actually had a mugshot taken, and I still maintain to this day that I was innocent. What? Would I want my mugshot up on Facebook? Actually, I'd love to see my mugshot. I've
armed
never
robbery?
Seen it. No, it was something different. But I was innocent, okay?
Misdemeanor or a felony?
Total misdemeanor.
So you were never,
but I still
had
a mugshot taken.
You were never convicted.
Well, I
okay, I paid a fine.
It's a long
I'm
story.
Not trying to dig dirt on you here.
My point is that at the time, if my mugshot would have gone up, I was prepared to fight to the death. And for circumstances that we don't have to go into, I decided not to because it was going to be costly. Well, but still, this isn't fair.
I think we all agree that it's not fair to put somebody's mugshot up before they're convicted. But even after they're convicted, do you think it's okay?
If it's after they're convicted, I guess it is. I think they can do it
whether you want them to or not at that point.
Yeah. I guess if you're convicted of something that's public record.
And is that actually going to do anything? Is that going to make you not drive drunk again because your mugshot got put up on Facebook?
You know, the way Facebook's going, I would almost feel like it would be some sort of a rite of passage with people. Like, oh, I got my mugshot. Woo!
Yeah, they did.
It could be a backfiring type of situation.
Yeah.
However, if it sent out an announcement to all your Facebook friends, there is where it could get really weird. Because then it's like, depending on who your friends are, like all your relatives suddenly know. And all
now
your friends.
That, I think you've hit on something, Robert. That it's not about the Facebook picture. It's about making sure everyone knows.
It's about global shame.
Yeah, forget the mugshot. Because that, like you're saying, that could be like, hey, check out, I'm mugshot, I'm hardcore.
Right.
But it's one thing to tell your buddies about your misdeeds, but man, suddenly if you got mom and grandma and half your family calling you up.
Just untag yourself. Doing? Come on. Get around it.
No, but what if the sheriff's department were able to send to all your friends?
Oh.
That would... I don't know. I'd be mad at Facebook then.
Yeah, exactly.
Because obviously they're in cahoots with the police department.
For some kind of privacy violation.
Right, exactly.
All right, let's take a look at the calendar. What's coming up these days?
A lot of stuff, Tom. Sony circles August 24th for an all-new Alpha DSLR launch event.
So says Engadget. You into photos? You into the cameras?
I love photos.
You into DSLR?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm in the market for a new one.
Maybe we should send you there.
Maybe we should.
Because I don't know anything.
No, I'd love to know more about it. I mean, I'm always going Canon versus Nikon. I'd love to see what Sony's got cooking. HTC schedules September 15th event, leaving us guessing as to what it might be launching.
This is very Apple-like. They just sent out sort of this cryptic kind of postcard image of something on fire. It's just smoke rising. And it says, HTC, quietly brilliant. Come see what HTC has dreamt up.
Well, I think at this point, to not say anything makes people the most curious. I mean, I guess it's always been that way, but Apple sure has been successful by doing that. So HTC, best of luck.
All the smoke makes the parsers say it's the G1 Blaze.
Ooh, because where there's smoke, there's a blaze.
Also, I want to point out, this is going to be in London. So all of you tech journalists that I know in London who are always complaining about, all the good stuff happens in San Francisco. Well, guess what? You're getting the HTC thing. So there.
Unless it's a really stupid event.
Right, which it might be. But I still think Leo should send me to cover it.
No, I think Leo should send me.
You're going to the Sony thing.
I speak English a lot better than you do.
I'm just reminding myself to get my passport updated. True. It expires not next month.
Not bloody likely.
Not bloody
Actually,
likely.
You speak English better than me. That much I can admit.
The Sony thing is in New York. You can go there. Neither one of us are going anywhere. I'm going to Atlanta, actually.
You're going to Atlanta. Why are you going to Hotlanta?
September 4th. I'm going to have a meetup with Twit fans in Atlanta. It's the only reason I'm going. The fact that there's this whole Dragon Con conference that I'm doing panels on, I'm doing a live sword
purely
and laser.
Quinky dink.
Total coincidence. The main reason is a Saturday night meetup with you, the Twit listener.
And
what's
viewer.
The deal with Dragon Con? Is it what's the main
dragons.
Theme of it?
It's, you know.
Is it like
games
Puff
or?
The Magic Dragon, Pete's Dragon, that retro dragon stuff?
No. Real dragons aren't like that.
Oh.
No, it's a sci-fi convention. It's a little bit like Comic-Con, but more tilted towards books and fans than the entertainment movies side of things. A little less Hollywood, I guess.
I'm like setting my calendar to hit QuakeCon next year. And D&D folks and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of authors come and get panels and people, you know, big fans of that stuff want to like sit. There's panels. There's a whole series of panels about Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time series. That's just fans talking about the Wheel of Time series.
Cool.
For instance,
is that the sort of thing that you would want to go to and listen in on?
Oh yeah, I loved going to Dragon Con last year. It was awesome. The best part is just walking around, seeing people in costume, dressed up, having fun. There's a whole parade that we're going to cover on Twit, so you can see the people. Like, the parade is awesome because you'll have like a whole group of people dressed as Wookiees, walking together. Like, here come 24 Wookiees, and then they're followed by a battalion of Stargate people, all dressed as Stargate. You know,
I like the idea of 10 Wookiees on a corner being like, "So where should we eat you guys?" Seriously,
at the end of the
does
parade.
Anyone know this area?
Yeah. Are there any good Wookiee bars around?
Oh man,
let's just go back to Hooters.
There's no good Wookiee bars in Atlanta anymore.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it's great.
Are you
going
to dress up? Be serious.
No, I'm not going to dress up.
No, you're not a dress up kind of guy.
Yeah,
but you'll take pictures.
Oh, yeah. We'll be streaming live.
And the video.
Yeah, we'll be doing all kinds of live view stuff and specials.
I can't wait.
That is Labor Day weekend. September 4th is the Saturday. On to the voicemails, 260-TNT-SHOW. That's 260-TNT-SHOW. It's a free local call in Butler, Indiana. Our first one comes from James, who actually didn't call the number. He sent it in as an attachment, but that's okay. We still like his thoughts about keyboard layouts.
Hi, TNT. This is James from Southampton on the south coast of England. I was listening to show 49 recently, where Tom showed off his big, clacky old keyboard. It got me thinking a little bit about keyboard layouts as well. There's been an article on the BBC News website this week highlighting the inefficiency of QWERTY, and I know this topic's probably been done to death, but I use the Dvorak keyboard myself. There's a bit of a geeky story there, and I just assumed that I'd be one of a shrinking minority. Do you think there's anything to recommend another keyboard layout like Dvorak? Thanks for the show, guys. I always look to you for the measured but light-hearted take on the day's tech news.
That is going to be our slogan from now.
Measured, with James saying it.
Yeah.
His voice was so soothing.
Did you?
It was like a lullaby. I just want him to keep talking.
First of all, James, I think you should give John C. Dvorak his keyboard back. No, he's talking about the Dvorak layout, which is instead of Q-W-E-R-T-Y, it goes D-V-O-R-A-K, which very few people use. And I hate to say it, James, as much as we love your accent,
I don't know.
There's a whole lot of momentum in that direction.
I'm QWERTY all the way. I'm a big fan of QWERTY.
There's definitely a subculture of alternative keyboard layouts out there.
For sure.
I have a couple, at least two of my programmer friends have switched over to Dvorak layout for their keyboards. And, you know, I've been using QWERTY for 25 plus years. So it's just like that is pretty well ingrained in my head. And I haven't even tried to learn a different layout. But you know what? If you've got it in you to do it, I think there's probably some performance gains to be had. Because we were talking about this earlier.
Hobby.
Because what was it? QWERTY was... Part of the design for QWERTY was just to help prevent mechanical typewriters from jamming up. So, you know,
it's all about what you know. I can do my 50 words a minute on QWERTY. I'm going to be slower if I move to another keyboard arrangement. It's going to
maybe
the learning curve is too much. Even if down the road I'd be faster, it's just not worth the effort.
I mean, if I could spell my name across where QWERTY is, you know, maybe the
Sarah Lane.
That would be fun for me, you know, so like you a just, hobby.
Like a piano, you just go, spell your name.
Signature,
but for mobile devices, you know, there's less of a need to switch the keyboard layout because you're usually just using your thumbs anyway.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes they're just ABC on-screen
keyboards.
That
confuses me more than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, those I don't. I like to keep the QWERTY layout as much as possible. Like on the iPad, I'm slower, but I'm still not thinking about it at all.
Teaching kids to type in K-6 now? I learned to type in high school. But
I learned to type in high school, too.
I never learned to type.
Yeah. Actually, I learned to type before high school because I had that software program, Mavis Beacon Teaches Typing.
Natalie, yeah. Yeah. She still makes fun of me when she watches me type because I have to look at the keys.
Are you a hunt and pecker?
Oh, well, I'm a modified. I have my own system, but I can't type without looking.
You don't do the F and J and the whole?
I don't even know what you're talking about, F and J.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Tom Merritt.
Are those the home keys
that have been foretold
by the elders?
So that if you're not paying attention and you're one off, you start typing really fast and it's like, what is this gibberish coming out of my... Oh, I'm doing that.
Basic encryption, that's what I call that.
There we go. We need exactly. The chat room says we need the Merritt keyboard layout with two R's and two T's right in the center row there.
The Merritt keyboard layout would be big buttons.
Now, see, Tom's name, his last name is fun to type, though, with your finger. You're kind of like RRTT. It's like, I like that.
That is fun.
Personally,
I like the
there are certain things that are easier or funner,
sort of
more fun to type
names.
Than others.
Yeah, Robert and I don't have the luxury of double letters in our names.
Oh.
You could. You could change your name. Lanneee. Pronounced Lane.
Of course. Lonnie, no Lane.
Now, something else that is about inputting data is our next caller who has some thoughts about the whole smudge hacking thing when you input your password on a phone.
Smudge.
Fudge.
Hey, guys. Tony in Florida. About the Google Android unlock pattern issue, why don't they just allow us to go over the same dot again? That would solve the entire issue and make it much more secure. Love the show.
So that you couldn't see where the smudges were going because you could just cross back over. It's like doubling back on your own path so they lose the scent.
I mean, I don't know.
That's a poser, isn't it?
Will that work? I don't know. I'm surprised there isn't more biometrics in our portable phones and in portable devices like that. Like, you think one of these cameras that they have in a phone would be capable of doing, say, an iris scan or a simple fingerprint scanner, even just to help people.
Yeah, do you remember
add
actually,
another layer to it all,
Robert? In 2001, I remember. You probably don't remember this, but we were walking back through the back door at CES, and some guy stopped us to do an iris scan demonstration, and it freaking worked.
Dude, that was awesome. They were able to scan your eye from 10 feet away.
Yeah.
And you just had to look in the general direction of it. And they were going to apply that to an ATM machine that they said they were deploying in Dallas, Texas. So, and that was over about a decade ago at this point.
Yeah, seriously.
But
whatever happened to that?
That stuff works. And I see it in high security installations, but that tech could easily be portable. I mean, LG is a big maker of the iris scanning tech, and they're currently... Our forces overseas in Afghanistan and Iran are using that in Iraq are using that tech to actually catalog and log people that they bring in for processing. So it's there. I'm just surprised that there's no app out there for that. Somebody write that app.
Yeah, come on, get on that. All right,
maybe
on to our emails.
Aren't that good.
Emails to TNT at twit.tv. Lead us off with a MacGyver email, won't you?
This one comes from Todd, who says, I remember a MacGyver episode where he used the smudge attack on security keypad for a door. Here's the attack. Number one, shave a pencil's lead graphite onto a paper with handy pocket knife. Step two, hold paper up near the keypad. Number three, blow the graphite off the paper and onto the keypad. Number four, graphite sticks to the keys on the keypad that are most often pressed because of the skin oil on those keys. Last step, try all combinations of the keys with the graphite sticking to them and ignore the other keys.
So it's a brute force attack, but you limit the possibilities.
Potato chip criminals.
Yeah.
Are the ones that are going to get caught.
Well, the best are Cheeto criminals because you don't even have to do the whole graphite part. You just look for the orange.
Your password is clearly 12345.
It's a make your own fingerprint dusting kit. Basically, that's what this person's suggesting. So,
Matt B wrote in, said, love the show, guys. Just thought you should know once you jailbreak your iPhone with the Jailbreak Me site, it's jailbroken until you update the firmware or return it to Apple. The files necessary to jailbreak the phone are still in memory even after a full erase and restore. I don't know if this applies to firmware updates. I haven't updated to 4.0.2. However, on iOS 4.0.1, I was unable to actually remove the files for the jailbreak from my iPhone. So I want to know if anybody can corroborate that. Not that I don't believe Matt, but we always like to have a couple sources that there is evidence that you've jailbroken even after you've restored.
It would kind of make sense that the files you used to do it would still be present in memory of some kind, because even if you can't just wipe, if you're going to restart the phone and then install the new OS, you can't lose that data. So it has to be there for in a semi-permanent basis at least. So It doesn't say you can't delete that information, though, once
you've
done it.
There should be a cleanup afterwards. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Totally.
Shall we move on? This one comes from Bill in Jacobstown, New Jersey. Hey, TNT crew. Personally, to listen to TNT whilst hearing live the ABC digital conversion and process was really cool. Talk about impromptu verite. It was a moment in history that should swell the breast of any true techie.
Aw, thanks, Bill. We actually got a handful of people who emailed after we apologized for all the construction sounds on Wednesday's show who were like, I liked the construction sounds, which that just goes to show on the internet, everybody likes something.
What, were they digging trenches for DTV or something?
No, Becky was from the ABC studios in New York on the show. And all of a sudden, like right before she went on, these construction guys came in and started like pulling out wires and getting rid of this analog phone system using drills and hammers and saws. And it was really noisy.
Oh, I love Teamsters.
Well, yeah. It's nice to know that a lot of people appreciate that kind of noise.
Yes, thank you. We will be putting out two versions of the podcast from now on, one with construction sounds and one without.
Just, you know, just for you, Bill. You're welcome.
Finally, a longtime listener, first-time emailer says, I am a district sales manager for an automotive company, and my territory is northern Indiana. I went to Butler, Indiana to find you. To my amazement, there wasn't much in Butler. I couldn't find your phone. But I did take some pics, so you have a point of reference now. I took pics of the local hotspots. I was going to get out and take a picture of the courthouse. Then I thought about one of the last TWIP episodes and figured a drive-by would be better. My favorite, although, has to be the skateboarding allowed on the church sign.
Yeah, it's welcome.
Yeah, skateboarding welcome.
At Christchurch and Butler, skateboarding welcome.
Good job, Christchurch at Butler. Yeah. Like, way to bring in the youth. Like, you know, there's nothing wrong with skateboarding. Come on.
It's not a crime.
Come on in. Enjoy.
Hey, my city has a dedicated skate park. I love it.
I know. See, that's smart. That's much smarter than trying to fight the skateboarders.
Give us two half pipes.
When skateboarding is against the law, only outlaws will have skateboards.
Have any of you guys actually been run over by a skateboarder or had a collision with somebody who was being a reckless skateboarder? Because it's never bothered me. And isn't that the reason that people...
I've never had that.
Cities try happen. To discourage yeah. kids from skateboarding? Let them skateboard.
Yeah. Almost got hit by a motorcycle yesterday, but skateboarders?
Outlaw motorcycle.
No, motorcycle. I'm not saying that.
Not a crime, Tom. Wear your helmet.
I love my two-wheel vehicles.
All right. Well, Robert Herron, thanks so much for joining us. It's been great hanging out with you and talking about this stuff.
Oh, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Let the folks know where they can find all the stuff you do on the internet.
Hey, you can always hit me up at hdnation.tv. That's where me and Patrick Norton do our weekly video show about all things home theater. Also, you can always visit my website at herronfidelity.com or hit me up on Twitter at Robert Herron. I'm pretty easy to find.
And, of course, you can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us TNT@twit.tv, and our phone number, free call in Butler, Indiana, is 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll see you next time.